From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. Cases of COVID are on the rise. In fact, in California, COVID cases are rising so quickly, the state is set to meet or surpass the number of cases seen in the summer of 2022. That's according to the California Health Department. And here in Idaho, well, we're seeing more COVID cases. So what's going on and how will this potentially impact the start of school for most Treasure Valley students in just 2 weeks? So joining us now to talk more is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and the co-author of the book, Preparing for the Next Global Outbreak. And remember, if you have a public health question, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Hi, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Gemma.
So Dr. Pate, let's start today with what we're seeing globally, because there is a new sub-variant, and it is surging in Australia and even in the United Kingdom.
That's correct. There's a new variant that we briefly mentioned a few weeks ago that I indicated I thought would probably overtake the variant we were dealing with at that time, which was KP.2, or the so-called flirt variant. And I mentioned that in the waiting wings and what appeared to be rising very quickly, and in some other countries overtook the KP.2 or flirt variant, is Fluke or KP.3 and several of its descendants. And so that's what we're seeing right now. The KP.3 has really overtaken the KP.2 that we were dealing with before. And this variant is more immune evasive. In other words, if you had a prior vaccine or infection and had immune protection from that, it still may not be enough to protect you from getting infected. The good news, we really need to think about immunity in two different ways. One is your immune protection against getting reinfected, which is minimal, probably last weeks, versus there is immune protection, because it's a whole different system of your immune system, against getting severely ill or ending up in the hospital. And that lasts far longer, probably at least a minimum of 18 months, maybe somewhat longer. But so what we're seeing is that people are getting reinfected, but they aren't typically ending up terribly ill in the hospitals. Now, with that said, Gemma, what you have pointed to and what is certainly occurring in a number of countries is they are seeing a lot more hospitalizations, and they're seeing very, very sick patients. And I just heard from a nurse in a neighboring state that their hospital is actually getting overwhelmed, which is a little surprising because we haven't seen that much in terms of severe illness recently in the United States. But what may be happening is I am kind of disturbed about people my age, old people, that have not kept up with their boosters. And while that protection for severe disease does last, as I said, probably at least a year and a half or so, there are people that have not, that are in my age group and many in assisted living centers that haven't had a booster since the beginning boosters were available. And so they're not going to have much protection. And if they get infected, they're going to be very, very ill. And I think that may be what we're seeing. Everybody's watching the Olympics. We've heard about outbreaks of COVID there. France is certainly having a lot. Greece is really struggling. Portugal, very difficult time. And the World Health Organization just put out a travel alert for those countries, as well as the entire European Union, that is having a very big COVID wave right now. Ours is probably developing right now.
Oh, okay. So can we talk a little bit about that? Because as I mentioned in the introduction, California is seeing numbers that they haven't seen in 2 years. And in fact, their health department about 2 days ago said they're expected to exceed the number of cases that they saw in the summer of 2022 when, and I believe that was the last time they had a really huge summer surge. So is that kind of a precursor to what we could see here in Idaho?
Well, it is a possibility because I, as you know, the way I try to make my predictions is look at first what's going on around the world, which I've just covered, but then I look at what's going on in the United States. And while we certainly saw an exception and some of the listeners that want to count my mistakes, God bless them, will remember that back in, I think it was 21, I made an error because I assumed that we were going to get a big wave of one of the variants that was hitting Oregon and Washington state very hard. For reasons I can't, and I don't think anybody else can explain, we didn't get it. So just because California or another state does have a really bad time doesn't necessarily mean that we will. However, I would say that occurs more often than not. So it is concerning, and it's especially concerning, Gemma, because number one, there people just aren't taking the precautions that they've taken before. Number two, people don't seem to have a healthy respect for this virus and the potential health consequences that can occur. And number three, people have been, I think, misled to think that this is a seasonal virus. So why would we have a problem during the summer? That's not when we usually have our respiratory viruses. They may not be thinking it would happen at this time of the year. And they've been told that, well, it's no worse than a cold or a flu. And of course, that can be true for some people, but that is not true for everybody.
Well, and Dr. Payne, I know you said, you know, what they're finding with this new variant is that maybe the symptoms aren't as bad and all of that. However, I've also read that some people are saying these are some of the worst symptoms they've had when they've gotten reinfected with this new variant. And just anecdotally, I have an acquaintance who I think this is his and his wife's, I think, third or fourth time having COVID. And he said, hands down, this has been the worst that he's seen that symptom wise. But also, they had no idea that there was this new variant out there. So I'm wondering if it's almost, you know, one of those things where here we have this new variant, it's surging in other parts of the world, and yet we all still have this idea that, well, the pandemic's over, so there's no more COVID. Or it's not that, or it's not that big of a deal,
right? Well, and let me just correct one thing. You quite understandably misunderstood me. What I was saying is we weren't seeing as many people severely ill. Which by when I say severely ill, I mean in the hospital or dying.
Okay,
we're not seeing as much of that. However, I have the same observation that you do. In other words, that many people contact me when they get ill for advice and help. And I, too, am hearing the very same thing as you are. People are telling me that have just recently got infected, oh, my gosh, this is worse than my initial COVID or any prior COVID infections they had. And what I have heard from them is much more respiratory symptoms than we heard from people earlier this year and late last year that tended to have more maybe fever, maybe aches, those kind of things, but not as much of the cough and shortness of breath. I'm hearing a lot more people struggling with cough, shortness of breath, and people telling me that actually this bout is lasting a lot longer. Now, these are anecdotes. That doesn't mean this will be the case for everybody, but I certainly am hearing exactly the same thing you are from people, and that we really shouldn't take this for granted. Remember, the risk for long COVID and other long-term health effects is additive or cumulative. So the more infections you get, the more you're taking a gamble at these long-term health effects. So it doesn't mean go back to a bubble, but it does mean don't be complacent. Don't take unnecessary chances. Be responsible. Take care. And especially when the wave of infection is as high as it is right now.
Well, and Dr. Pate, I feel like I'm just playing back an old record because here we are 2 weeks before school starts for most of the Treasure Valley, and we are potentially seeing a COVID surge. I feel like we've talked about this since the summer of 2020. The kids start to go back to school, and we have a variant, and we're seeing this surge. So any advice for, you know, for students, for parents, you know, caregivers of kiddos that are heading back to school? I mean, because I'm thinking, knock on wood, it's like, well, for the most part, you know, we've been healthy all summer, and now I'm sending them back to school, right? A surge. Yeah.
Well, you're exactly right. And it does sound like deja vu because we've talked about this before. One of the best ways to spread respiratory viruses is to have kids in public schools. That is certainly true for influenza. Those little rascals are the ones that get it, spread it. But we certainly see that with this virus as well, COVID. And what we see is that when you take all these children and you put them in schools, the same thing is what happens with adults. When you put adults in large gatherings, because really, it's just a matter of the odds. What are the chances that somebody around you is infected? Right now, based on the wastewater analysis, it looks like probably somewhere in between about one in every 45 to 50 people is going to be infected. So if you're just getting together with your neighbors, not a high chance. But if you're getting together in a big auditorium to watch one of the Olympic events, pretty good chance that you have multiple people in there infected. And that's what we've seen. Same thing for school. You get these kids in school, in rooms, inside with others. We're going to see the spread. What can be done? Well, the first thing is if you have a home where you have a high risk individual, this is the time to get your booster if you haven't already gotten it. Because what we see is that boosted effect occurs in about a week to 10 days. And as you said, school's going to be starting in a couple of weeks. So this would be a good time to get the booster if you haven't. If grandma's in the house, grandpa, a kid that's going through cancer treatment, whatever it is, this would be a time to get the booster. The second thing is be on the lookout for symptoms. We know that we can reduce spread in households if we test. If somebody's got symptoms, test and retest, and then isolate them, try to have them in their own bedroom with their own bathroom, and have everybody else wears masks whenever there's a need to interact, we can reduce the spread in homes. And then, of course, to my dismay, we could make this tremendously better for everyone if we would just improve the air handling in schools. There is so much that could be done. Unfortunately, there were federal funds to help us do this a few years ago. Most schools turned those down. That's a terrible shame because it helps for all respiratory viruses, not just COVID, and it would help keep our kids in school, keep our kids functioning, and we know that everybody performs better in clean air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, good advice there, Dr. Pate, and hopefully everything goes smoothly as we head into the next couple of weeks. Dr. Pate, you recently wrote a blog post, some interesting research coming out about long COVID, and I know there's a lot to get to, but one of the issues that I read in your blog is that we're seeing more long COVID in women. And I have to say, everyone that I know that has long COVID is female.
Yes, this is a particular risk group. It doesn't mean that men and boys don't get long COVID as well, but we see a disproportionate impact on women. And I think most people don't have a real appreciation for the fact that the largest age group that has long COVID is the adults in their midlife and young adults in mid 30s, 40s is a particular time we see this. And so it's very devastating. There may be listeners that have long COVID. I know that many of them are struggling. This is completely upended their lives, changed that they can't do the things that they did before and that they want to do. And there's probably everyone listening knows somebody now with long COVID. It's become so common. And so What is exciting, although it's taken us way too long, but we're starting to really understand that long COVID may not be one disease. It may be a spectrum of diseases because we're finding a number of things that may be what triggers long COVID. And so, for example, and especially where this affects women disproportionately, is autoimmunity. Autoimmunity means where the immune system is turned against yourself. We depend on our immune systems to know what's us and then to recognize what's not us and attack what's not us. However, there is likely genetic predisposition to this, and we often see this in females. And it can be that a viral infection, and in this case, COVID, can trigger the events that cause that gene to be expressed and the disease to occur, where you develop autoantibodies, where the antibodies, instead of attacking the virus, are attacking some particular tissue. The other thing in the autoimmunity is something we call molecular mimicry. What that means is that there's something about one of the proteins of the virus that is close enough to one of your own proteins that in attacking the virus, that antibody will also attack your own tissue. So those are that's one area. Now, most people, it would not explain everybody's illness. Many people don't have evidence of autoimmunity, but we're seeing something very common, and that is persistence of the virus. In other words, normally you get a viral infection, you fight it off and you clear that virus. But we have known about viruses that you get and we get it under control, but we're not able to clear it. One of the best examples that most people know about is chickenpox. You don't actually clear that chickenpox virus, but you contain it so that you're not having any problems. But then down the road, when you get much older, or you get immune compromised, that chickenpox virus is what can cause zoster or shingles. And so that's because it becomes reactivated. And we're seeing that in COVID, reactivation of some viruses, but we're seeing persistence of the SARS-CoV-2 virus, meaning that where we shouldn't be able to detect it months after the illness, we can find the genetic evidence of the virus, and which means that it has to be persisting and the immune system's just not getting to it. So why is all of this exciting? Well, once we can know what's causing it, now we can do the trials to see if we can fix it. So for example, one theory is that long COVID people have a dysregulated immune system response. In other words, it's not responding properly. And there's been some anecdotes that if we just vaccinate them, we can get their immune system to kick in the right way. And so now we're doing trials to see, can we give vaccinations and help people with long COVID? With the persistence, can we give people antivirals? And there's a lot of optimism about this, some encouragement. And those trials are going on now to see if we can fix this. With autoimmune conditions, we have medications we can use, and those can be tried. And so we're coming up with enough understanding of how this may be occurring that we now may be on our way to identifying treatments, which is very exciting. I would just remind people, though, the best way to avoid long COVID is to prevent it. And the best ways to prevent it are to be vaccinated before you get infected. And if you do get infected, then to take treatments very early. And we have antiviral treatments. And I also write about a very fascinating development that's recent where we've realized that metformin, a drug that we use to treat diabetes, can be very helpful in reducing the viral load when you're sick and also preventing long COVID, at least from early studies. So those are going to be studied some more to confirm.
And you also wrote about the bird flu, Dr. Pate. So where are we and what do we know at this point about bird flu?
Well, unfortunately, the bird flu continues to spread among dairy cattle. We have growing numbers of states and growing numbers of herds that are infected. So we have not contained the spread of this virus yet. So that is concerning. Even more concerning is that we now have proof that the virus is spreading from those dairy cattle to other mammals. We have evidence that it is infecting farm cats or house cats that get into these farm areas. We think from drinking the milk of an infected cows, but cats get extremely ill and often die from the bird flu. We also have seen that it has infected some other animals that probably incidentally get on these farms, like skunks and foxes, raccoons. So we've seen that. Most concerning is that we are now up to 14 humans infected. And 10 of those just occurred in about the last month. So that is a big escalation. We had one infection in 22. We had one infection in Texas back in March. We had a couple in Michigan a month or two later, and now we've got 10 in Colorado. And what we think, now the government has not confirmed this, but some of my informal channels are telling me that what they think was going on is, unfortunately, this terrible heat. It's hard for any of the farm workers to wear personal protective equipment in this kind of heat. And so these 10 cases, we believe, were all related to culling of infected poultry, and that what the farm may have done because of the terrible heat is to put some big industrial fans in there. Unfortunately, putting fans in there is a very good way when you're culling the animals to then aerosolize the virus. And so that's one of the concerns why we may have seen this big increase in the number of cases. Regardless of all this, here's the bottom line. If you look at the pandemics we've had in the last century, so Spanish flu 1918, then in 1957, 1968, and then most recently in 2009, these are all started as bird flu, avian influenza viruses. What we think has happened in most of those cases is that they have infected an intermediate animal, most likely swine, pigs. And when they get in there, as I've mentioned before in this program, influenza virus has 8 pieces to it. And when you get more than one virus in there, they can swap pieces. And so what happens is pigs can be infected with the avian viruses, they can be infected with more than one avian virus, and they can be infected with human influenza viruses. And then you put these all in the pig, we call it a mixing bowl, and they can swap parts, and then you may hit one that now has the real ability to transmit to humans. That is clearly what happened in 2009, one of the most transmissible pandemic influenza viruses we've ever had. And that is the concern with these dairy cows. Are they going to be the new swine or pig, so to speak? In other words, that they get infected with avian influenza viruses and then it gets mixed. We're coming up on our own human seasonal flu season. What if these workers are transmitting our human flus to them? Are these going to get mixed, reassorted? Is it going to be a threat? And I don't know if it will be.
Well, as always, Dr. Pate, we so appreciate you taking time to talk with us.
Thank you, Gemma.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.